Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
On this Sunday morning, I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Woodbine for their sponsorship. Woodbine, pick, bet, and cheer on great racing north of the border, and they certainly had some of that yesterday. We will recap the nice day they had Canadian International, E.P. Taylor, and the Arctic yesterday on their stakes calendar up north of the border. I am back in the studio after a couple of days on the road. Friday, want to thank the folks at O'Toole's for their hospitality. Also, thank the folks who showed up to participate in the bankroll. It was kind of fun. Over at O'Toole's, 1814 Central Avenue, right in a plaza right near the intersection Central Avenue and 155. Very convenient. Nice place to enjoy some racing with an easy bet location there. That had its own little area over on the side of the restaurant bar with some TVs and self-serve machines. And then there's the bar area, restaurant area, and a nice event room too. So if you haven't been over to O'Toole's, grab a little lunch someday and you can watch the races, Breeders' Cup. I know that Friday and Saturday they plan to have a Breeders' Cup party back in the event room. But we enjoyed ourselves on Friday and made a little money for the bankroll team. I think everybody on the bankroll team walked out with about $35 free money for participating. Again, we thank the folks at O'Toole's and everybody who stopped by and enjoyed the Friday afternoon on the road action. And we continued on the road yesterday at Yonkers. That was a lot of fun. Big day at Yonkers with the International Trot, $1 million up for grabs. And they again, hospitality from the folks at Yonkers, thanks to them. They had a great location for us right out by the paddock, or right out by the winner's circle. And I have to admit, you know, about a week ago, and they said, yeah, we'll put you out by the winner's circle. I thought, this time of year, what's that going to, you know, it could go either way. But it went the right way. It was a gorgeous day yesterday. Really a nice fall afternoon, shirt sleeve weather. And so we were out there all afternoon long watching the races and doing the cut-ins and hopefully had a chance to catch our coverage. It was a lot of fun. We kicked the day off. If you picked up the one sheet, kicked the day off with a $76 winner on top on the one sheet down at Yonkers. And overall, it was an okay day. If you boxed our three picks up in the International, there was a nice little exacta there as well. So, again, if you followed along, hopefully we gave out some good information. We had a couple of visits from Frank Drucker, who is the handicapper on the simulcast signal down there at Yonkers. And so we appreciate his participation. Joe Feraldo from The Standardbred Owners Association of New York. Joe's the president, so we caught up with him and got some of his thoughts on the big day. And we also were visited by Assemblyman Gary Pretlow, who is the chairman of the Racing and Gaming Committee in the New York State Legislature. It was fun to see. He was enjoying a day at the races, so we had him come over and talk a little bit. And he's actually looking forward to next week because Yonkers will host the Legislators' Pace, which is a group of New York State legislators sitting in the Selke and facing off on track. So that should be a lot of fun next week down at Yonkers as well. But again, thank everybody who took the time to visit with us yesterday. And again, thank all the folks at Yonkers for their hospitality. Again, thank you for tuning in and again, hopefully cashing a few tickets on Yonkers yesterday on what was a nice day. And with the nice weather, it was fun. I have to admit, it's tough for me to judge the crowd. I don't go to Yonkers enough. And I wasn't inside the grandstand area. We were out on the apron. But the apron, we got close to the big race, kind of filled up with people and certainly down the fence for the big race. A lot of folks there. They were handing out flags that were representative of the nationalities of the horses that were on track for the big race, and folks were waving their flags and enjoying. And you heard a lot of accents and foreign languages being spoken as folks showed up to support their particular nationality on track. And again, it was a fun day with not only the International, but a couple of $250,000 purse races as well. So we enjoyed our time down at Yonkers. Hopefully you enjoyed our live OTB on the road coverage. But we are back in the studio this morning. We'll have some stakes recaps to kick things off, do a little handicap. And I think maybe I'll take a look at the the late pick five at Belmont today during our handicapping segment. Depends on what the time we have left, but I should be able to kind of go quickly through that sequence. Be on a little bit later, obviously, with OTB Live this afternoon, so we'll be able to do it live as well. But towards the end of the program, we will be joined by Jenny Reese, our friend from Kentucky. Jenny, of course, the longtime racing writer for the Louisville Courier-Journal. She has now moved on, represents the Kentucky Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, which in that aspect, she covers Kentucky horses and Kentucky horse racing. And I thought we'd pull her in because she had sent out a press release and email a couple of days ago, just kind of covering some of the Kentucky horses who are clearly headed to the Breeders' Cup. So I thought with really Breeders' Cup countdown here, we are mere weeks away, as it will be the first weekend in November, I thought we'd get a little update on maybe some of the Kentucky Breeders' Cup runners. So that'll come up towards the end of the program. But let's start things out. And I think we have actually the audio and the entire race yesterday from Yonkers. I wanted to go back and show that because, again, we don't do a lot of sulky-centric things on the show. But with $1 million up for grabs in the international pace and having been down there yesterday, I thought we would take the time to show that entire Yonkers International yesterday with the call. And I called it 1, 3, and 5. The 3 is Atlanta. And this is just an absolutely super talented 4-year-old trotting mare who has earned, what, $1.7, almost $1.8 million going into the race yesterday. She was going to clearly take quite a bit of action. Her game plan is typically to go to the front end. I put her underneath, however, because I went back to the race in July where she went over a mile. And this, the international, is 1.25 miles. And if you follow harness racing enough, you know that the vast, vast majority of the races are 1 mile. So you throw a little something like this, a little distance difference in there, it adds to the handicapping puzzle. And the again, Atlanta had gone over a mile back in July over at the Meadowlands and faded a little bit late. So I wasn't totally convinced about the distance, whereas some of these European runners often go over a mile. So Atlanta, again, being a speed horse, the game plan was going to be to take him. And when you watch the race here, note the three-quarter time. Atlanta is out there winging in three quarters, and note the time that comes up on the board as compared to some of her other times. I'm just going down the last few races for Atlanta. The three-quarter time was 1:24, 1:23, 1:24. You'll see she is going a little more leisurely yesterday on the front end. Again, as compare that the quarter you'll see pop up to the 1:24s and 1:23s she normally runs. And so at that point you think Atlanta's in a pretty good spot. Zach and Gio, representing Italy, came in with an 8-for-8 record this year. That one also likes the front end. Didn't get it yesterday with Atlanta getting out there. But Zach and Gio, again, with the 8-for-8 record. I had that horse down in the third spot in the mix. Went off as the favorite, however. Took a lot of action. Frank Drucker, we had him on, and he explained that that was kind of a function of the European pools and the way their win bet works. That was his hypothesis, which seems kind of logical, because Zach and Gio 8-1 on the morning line with the 8-for-8 record taking a little more action. That was understandable, though, but did go off again as the clear-cut favorite. Atlanta went off at 7-2 as the second choice. The horse I had on top is number 1, Slide So Easy, and this was a 10-year-old, I believe, representing Denmark. 7 wins, 3 seconds and 11 starts this year, and had plenty of experience going a distance of 1.25 miles or 1.516 miles. So I thought Slide So Easy could be an interesting player in here, 22-1. So again, Slide So Easy is the number 1 horse. Atlanta is the number 3 horse. Zach and Gio is the number 5 horse. You can kind of take a look at those three as we go around. In the Yonkers International yesterday from Yonkers Raceway, we'll give you the entire race here. Again, it's a little bit of a different take on harness racing with $1 million up for grabs and 1.25 miles. Here it is, yesterday's Yonkers International.
Guardian Angel Oz from the United States, and Germany's representing Norton Commander, a full field of 10. Ready for the big one here. The $1 million Yonkers International Trot. This field is on gate. They're off. Off stride, Bahia Kano. Out quickly, Atlanta. And from mid-pack, Switzerland's Usa Jocelyne. From the inside, slide so easy third. Between horses, Italy's Zekon Joe. Cruzada de la Noche on the far outside from Sweden. Down on the inside, Guardian Angel Oz. And then we come back to Norton Commander from Germany. Then Marion Marauder. Two lengths to Lionel. And far back after the break is France and Bahia Kano. They're outside the quarter pole. And Atlanta from the United States has the lead. Usa Jocelyne on the outside, first up here from Switzerland. They went the opening quarter mile in a time of 28-1. Sit in the pocket here. Denmark slide so easy third. Zekon Joe is right there, comfortable. Second over fourth from Italy. Third over fifth as they swing around the clubhouse turn the first time. Guardian Angel Oz, Canada's Marion Marauder saves ground toward the inside. Lionel's moved up two spots. From Norway down toward the inside. And then comes Sweden's Cruzada de la Noche and Germany's Norton Commander. They've settled in nicely here, eight lengths from these group. And far back off stride again is Bahia Kato. They went a half mile in 59 seconds flat as this international field hits the far turn the second time at Atlanta. Doles out the speed. Outside, Usa Jocelyne is right there, very comfortable. And on the inside, slide so easy third. Zekon Joe from Italy is right there, perched second over fourth and unhurried as they approach the three quarters. Toward the inside, Marion Marauder from Canada. Then Guardian Angel Oz, Tietrich with the United States on the outside within six of the lead. Lionel's going to need some racing room. Cruzada de la Noche has seven legs to bridge this gap. And Norton Commander, they went three quarters in 1:28, 29 second in that quarter. And Atlanta just cruising along here. Atlanta leads it up the backstretch as they approach the mile marker in the international trot on the outside. Usa Jocelyne slides so easy. He's had the perfect pocket journey. Zekon Joe is coming alive three wide from Italy. Marion Marauder's pinned in. The United States Guardian Angel Oz trying to rally late in the game. Lionel's nowhere to go. Cruzada de la Noche has work to do. They've gone the mile in 1:55. Four on the final turn of the Yonkers International Trot, and Zekon Joe's made his move. Atlanta's given way in between horses, slide so easy third, and they're in the stretch in the International Trot, and kicking away is Zekon Joe into second. Denmark slide so easy, but it's going to be Italy. Zekon Joe, much the best in the International Trot. Slide so easy from Denmark, Marion Marauder from Canada, and United States fourth with Guardian Angel Oz in 2:24.1. Italy reigns supreme in the international trot.
Representing Italy, Zach and Gio. Boy, I mean, look at him turn into the stretch here. Just kind of runs away and makes this a laugher here. 9 for 9 this year. Takes the better part of that $1 million purse down. Boy, what a performance. Fading, however, was Atlanta. And I said, take a look at that three-quarter time when they posted 1:28 as compared to the 1:24s and 1:23s she usually posts. Again, going a mile as compared to a mile and a quarter. But you still thought, 4 seconds slower, she was going to have plenty left. But she just does not like the extended distance. So Atlanta fades and finishes seventh in here. Zach and Gio gets it done. But again, that horse that I thought was a little bit interesting, and I used as my top pick, the number one slide so easy, pretty good second in here at 22-1. So essentially the even money favorite, $1.15 to $1 for Zach and Gio, $4.30. But with the 22-1 shot underneath, it was a $68 exacta. So a nice little exacta there. If you box things up for our picks on the one sheet. And again, I thought slide so easy. The 10 mark representing 10-year-old representing Denmark. Nice second place finish in there. So I was kind of happy with the results with the one sheet yesterday, playing a track that, we don't normally focus on Yonkers on their big day, particularly kicking things up. I was tempted to just turn around and go home after we had the $76 winner in the opening leg, but we stuck around all day. Happy we did, and again, had a fun time in the international fun race with Zach and Gio. Now 9 for 9, representing Italy. Clearly, the connection's very happy, and they were right behind us in the winner's circle, and I was tempted to reach out and pull in the trainer or the driver. I'm not sure we were going to get a response in English, however. They were certainly very happy about the race in Italian, but my Italian, not just rusty, non-existent. So that wasn't going to work very well. But again, congratulations to them. All right, let's move on and watch some of the other stakes action yesterday on the thoroughbred side. Let's go over to Belmont Park first of all. Take a look at the Sands Point Grade 2 event. Mile and an eighth on the grass for the three-year-old fillies. I have to admit, I whiffed here. You always have to pay attention to Klarovich and Chad Brown. I just thought this horse was a little lightly raced, new and improved, I'm speaking of. And the numbers may be a little light, but being lightly raced, that was had the potential to change and this horse move forward. But I thought some of the horses with experience were maybe a little more interesting. So this is one where I was willing to take a stand against Chad and Klarovich. Mistake, as number five, New and Improved, does get it done. Number four, Field Glorious, runs second. And number six, Romantic Pursuit, runs third. Super Escape is the horse I liked. Led much of the way, the number seven horse, before fading to be a disappointing sixth in there at 11-1. On the other hand, I took a little stand against New and Improved. The betting public did not. They made this horse the 8-5 favorite. So $5.20. And look at this stretch run. Nice late run. So Klarovich, Chad Brown, nice little three-year-old turfer with only three starts now under the belt and a couple of stakes races. The ungraded risk-averse up at Saratoga, and now the grade two Sands Point. So again, they have a pretty nice-looking three-year-old that clearly has potential to go on next year and be very good for them as a four-year-old on the turf off of what we've seen in the first three starts of the career. Maiden breaker up at Saratoga late July, fourth last time in the risk averse, and then a pretty good-looking late kick there to win the Sands Point yesterday and put a grade two on the resume in only the third career start. All right, a little bit earlier on the card was the Floral Park. Fillies and mares going six furlongs on the grass. I had Goldwood on top, Mamanu in the second spot, and then Fire Key in the third spot. And they're pretty much all right there. It is a blanket finish, you know, ding dong, as I like to say, blanket finish, except for Mamanu, who was way back, faded badly in here, did Mamanu. You have to wonder if something went amiss there because I'm looking at the chart margin here. Neck, head, nose, neck, 23 lengths back to Mamanu. But Fire Key gets it done. This is a horse I've liked throughout the career. Earlier on, it was trained by our friend Pat Kelly, now in the barn at Jim Ryerson, and just has been a real hard knocker, particularly on the turf sprinting. Fire Key's the number one horse here. And again, you will see, this is a ding-dong blanket finish that is won by a very gritty Fire Key who just will not let them go by late. Goldwood, the horse I like, does get second in here, and Fear No Evil third. But as I say, you don't see this a lot with the top five right in the mix, neck, head, nose, neck. Fire Key did go off as the 2-1 favorite. Betting public right there. Had a little trouble at the start, but kind of got in good position early. And then, again, dug in and was very gutsy, very gritty there coming down the stretch, taking the Floral Park Fire Key. All right, let's move on to Keeneland. Take a look at the QE2 yesterday, grade one event, as Keeneland's very nice meet continues weekend number two. Grade one event on the schedule for the second Saturday of the meet, $500,000 for three-year-old fillies. Chad again with Cambier Park coming out of a win in the Del Mar Oaks. Prior to that, the Belmar Oaks ran third behind Concrete Rose, won the Wonder again just before that. So four wins and six starts coming into the race yesterday. Went off as the 9-5 favorite, no surprise there. Castle Lady comes over from Europe and winds up second. And Princess Carolina, the number four horse, winds up third, coming out of a nice win in the Dueling Ground Oaks last time. for Ken McPeak. Princess Caroline, another one of those that I've liked at various points in various races throughout the career. And off the win at Kentucky Downs with Jose Ortiz on board, attracted me a little bit yesterday. Went off as a pretty good 12-1 too, but could only manage third in there as Cambier Park. John Velasquez on board, continuing what is a great late summer fall for him. Just amazing. But goes down to Keeneland, gets the win on the Chad Brown runner, Cambier Park. Winning chart margin there, a length, again, $1.80 to the dollar favorite, $5.60 is the winner's price in the QE2. Moving on to the big day at Woodbine, Canadian International Day, and we'll work our way back from the Canadian International. Three nice stakes on the card that we will take a look at. Headlined by the Canadian International. Grade one event, $800,000 up for grabs, mile and a half on the grass, and Desert Encounter went off as a second choice at 3-2. The favorite was Zayad. Zayad coming over from Europe off of a win at Deauville last time in a group two. That one took the action, $1.15 to the dollar favorite, winds up third. Alanak, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, also in from Europe, winds up second at 13-1. Desert Encounter, who came over from a win in England last time, in fact, had won the last three over in Europe. Desert Encounter, again, the second choice at $1.50 to the dollar. The number four horse gets the kind of the jump here on number five, Alanak, and gets to the wire first. Desert Encounter getting it done. Had three wins and seven starts coming into this event, but again, those were the last three. So came in very good form with three group wins, a couple of group threes, and all three were group threes. Goodwood, Windsor, and Newberry comes over here, attracts some attention on the board again as a short price second choice, but gets it done. So it's a nice addition. There was a short field of six, but they were talented, kind of fun runners with four of the six coming over from Europe, and they ran 1, 2, 3, 4. So Europeans dominating in this year's Canadian International. A little bit earlier on the card, the E.P. Taylor, $600,000 up for grabs for the ladies, going a mile and a quarter on the grass. The number eight in here is Starship Jubilee, Kevin Attard trainee, and we were up there for the win in the Canadian last time for Starship Jubilee, and in fact, I talked a little bit to Kevin Attard about that one. He was high on the horse's chances the weekend we were up there for the Woodbine Mile, but won the Canadian that afternoon, and you can see number eight, Starship Jubilee, continues her winning ways. Durance runs second, Tane runs third. They are both European shippers, but the spoils in the E.P. Taylor go to the hometown horse, Kevin Attard, Louis Contreras on board. Second choice at 7-2, an even $9 there. The slight favorite was Red Tea coming in from Europe at $3.35. To the dollar, so just under 7-2. That one could do no better than eighth in the field of 10. So a little bit of a disappointment for the favorite, who was coming off a third-place finish in a group one in Deauville over in Europe on the 18th of August, but came over here, and again, a little bit of a disappointment in the E.P. Taylor. However, not disappointing, Starship Jubilee, for, as I say, Kevin Attard. Three wins and six starts so far this year. That put her over $1 million in earnings, clearly. The career, 14 wins and 31 starts for the six-year-old mare. And finally, stakes action up at Woodbine, the Nearctic. This one, 6 furlongs on the grass and $250,000 up for grabs in the grade two. It will be number five, City Boy, getting it done. First win of the season, and that would explain, or partially explain at least, the $24 to 1 odds as the second longest price on the board. The longest price at 30-1, Boreal Spirit winds up ninth and last in here, but the second to longest price wins the race. Margin ahead, margin back to third is ahead as Reconfigure runs second, and Richie's In the House runs third. But City Boy with, I would say, a major upset, being the second longest price on the board and paying a cool $50.70. City Boy, 20-1 on the morning line, gets it done. Again, another little kind of a blanket finish here with the top three being separated by a head-to-head margin. And it is City Boy getting it done there in the New Arctic. So there's a little recap, some of the stakes action yesterday to catch you up on what happened at the various venues, not just around the country, but north of the border as well. All right, we'll come back. We will take a little look at some of the action this afternoon at Belmont with our handicapping segment. And in a few minutes, we will be joined by Jenny Reese, Kentucky HBPA. She'll take a look at some of the Kentucky runners that are headed to the Breeders' Cup. That's all coming up as we will continue here on this edition of Racing Across America on a Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned.
Place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat screen TVs, tournament style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup Win and Earn Series.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
The King George, which is our Win and Earn race, provides the top middle distance horse in Europe. We saw Highland Reel running both races.
We know when we show up at the Breeders' Cup, we've got the world to beat, not just everybody in the United States. Breeders' Cup Challenge, win and you're in.
Across America, let's jump in, do a little handicapping again. I'll be back in, a couple hours with OTB Live on this Sunday afternoon, so we will be live handicapping them. But I thought handicapping segment this morning, maybe just kind of take a quick look at the late pick five at Belmont, maybe give you some ideas there. First leg, and again, I haven't pulled up scratch. I think it's too early for scratches. They're usually about 11 o'clock, so I'm anticipating we stick on the grass here. We were down in New York yesterday, the New York area at Yonkers, and certainly was nice yesterday. The opening leg, that's race number five of the late pick five. Optional claimer, non-winners, two other than. Mile and 16th on the grass. I went 4, 3, 6, and 5. Classic Covey on top for a Bill Mott. But I have to admit, this is the kind of race where I think not only any of the four can jump up on a best effort and be right there. But Memories of Peter, I may wind up regretting leaving that, the number seven horse, out. But Classic Covey, just the Bill Mott trainee, firing some pretty good numbers over the past few starts. Now, the past few starts include starts last year. This horse had a layoff almost a year, 11 months, going from October of 2018 until September of this year. But the comeback was pretty good. I'm hoping this horse can build off of that and maybe move forward a little bit. If that's the case, probably the horse to beat. But that's a little bit of a question mark. What will we get in the second start back? Bird's Eye View, I think, has some nice early speed, but last time showed a closing kick down at Kentucky Downs. I like the move from Kentucky Downs angle in here as well. And I would expect probably we'll see some speed. I don't know. In this field, I think the potential is there to show the speed and be in front, but I don't know, given what we saw last time, whether that'll be the game plan. But I think we'll be closer than we were last time either way. Trained by Mike Deeney for Ballybrit. They were the connections that had my namesake, Merrill, that ran. And I've mentioned it before. I talked to Mike Deeney about that horse up at Saratoga last year. Subsequently, it has been claimed away from them. But saw Mike again up at Saratoga this year. And it seems like he's having a little more of a presence in New York. Maybe next year up at Saratoga we'll have him come back and sit in with us some morning and just kind of let people that's one of the things I like to do at Saratoga. Trainers who are maybe a little more under the radar. You see their name a lot, and they do very well, but you don't get a chance to kind of see and get to know them. And so sometimes up at Saratoga, I think that's fun to bring those kind of folks on and let people meet them and get a little behind-the-scenes and introduction. So as I say, maybe next year we'll get Mike Deeney on. But he has Bird's Eye View, who I think is a competitor. Aquaphobia and Applicator, again, both of those have races that if we get to, a better effort. They're good enough. Applicator comes out of a race down at Kentucky Downs, which I just mentioned. I like Memories of Peter, Irad Ortiz on board. Seasonal debut off of almost a year layoff was a big effort with a big buyer. I'm wondering if the last time maybe the competition wasn't a little too tough and the horse bounced. If that's the case and we get a rebound, yeah, Memories of Peter. So this fifth race is a tough way to start off the sequence, but I have it 4, 3, 6, and 5. In the sixth race, Conditional Claimers going 6 furlongs. I have it 7, 3, 1, and 2. The number 7 is Lemme Have It. You've heard me mention this before. This is an angle I like quite a bit, and I kind of jumped onto it. If you remember back in the old teletheater years ago, it was brand new to be streaming things on the internet, fairly new anyway. And I was doing some handicapping from upstairs in the old teletheater in the afternoon. I'd kind of come in, fire up the camera, and then we had an internet-only kind of, it was essentially an OTB Live that was kind of internet-only. But during that period, I just kind of latched onto this angle of State Bred Allowance moving into open claiming company. And at that time, there weren't these open claimer conditionals, which I think is even a better, more potent class move. So again, on this class move, I think Lemme Have It is a player in the sixth. The number 3, Gracetown, a couple races back, maybe a little overmatched against Kefefi, but then followed up in a turf sprint against Allowance Company at Saratoga, and still maybe a little overmatched, and maybe the surface was an obstacle as well. I think moving in for a tag and getting to the dirt with some okay workout since that last race, Gracetown should contend, and Sarah Reaney in the third spot. Another one making a turf to dirt move where I think the return to dirt will be beneficial, particularly if we get back to that race 2 back. So the sixth at Belmont, 7, 3, 1, and 2. Seventh race is stakes action, the point of entry. 3-year-olds and up on the turf at 1.5 miles for $100,000. I have it 4, 3, 5, and 7. The number 4 is Noble Indy for Todd Pletcher. We say it a lot. It's kind of counterintuitive. You think the longer they go, probably the better chance a closer has. Well, if they go too fast, that may be true. But what often happens is the front runner kind of gets out in front and lopes along out in the lead, and they just can't reel that one in. I'm hoping that is the case with Noble Indy, because I think this will be the horse that goes out there and makes the lead. And I'm not seeing a lot of pace pressure here otherwise. So Noble Indy on top. Second slot, Red Knight. This horse, you go back and in the last few races, last 4 or 5, they're kind of mixed, where the horse is way back or the horse is a little bit more of a stalker. I'm hoping we get that stalking position. Although, if I'd be honest, I think sitting back farther, probably more likely. But again, as a handicap, I was hoping maybe kind of stalk, because I don't think the pace is going to play into coming from too far back. So we'll hope Red Knight is somewhere in the mix and has a little punch late. And then Pillar Mountain in the third spot. Those races three and four back, Belmont four back, Saratoga three back, where the horse did have a closing kick. I suppose if it falls apart a little bit, if maybe there is some pace that starts to come back, Pillar Mountain might be able to take advantage of that. So for me, in the point of entry, race number 7, 4, 3, 5, and 7. Race number 8, state bred optional claimer. I have it 1, 3, 5, and 6. Big Jemmy on top. Four wins in the last five starts, although four of those were up at the Finger Lakes. But five races back, a winner at Belmont. A move from Naira to Finger Lakes to me is virtually always a positive move. That means the reverse I have to kind of look a little bit skeptically at. But again, if you go five back, this horse won on the Naira circuit. This horse has run well on the Naira circuit in the past. So I think in the good form shown up at the Finger Lakes now, the return to Naira will not be an obstacle for the Linda Rice trainee. Number one, Big Jemmy on top. Carthen in the second spot. Hadn't been seen since April, when we got the September 19th third place finish. Showed a little punch there early before fading, but I think should benefit from that. Cuts back a little in distance, which I think will be beneficial. And I love Jackson in the third spot. A couple of very nice daylight wins in the last two starts, and I think is going to fit nicely with this company. This is yet another Linda Rice runner. This would be the shorter half of the two Lindas I've mentioned. So Big Jemmy would be the other half of that uncoupled Linda Rice entry. But I do think I Love Jackson plays too off of those last two starts. So in the eighth race at Belmont, 1, 3, 5, and 6. And we wrap things up in Belmont's ninth race with Maiden 40 Claimers going 7 on the grass. I have a 3, 1, 10, and 9. Shannon's Girl was claimed 2 back, for $40,000. Ran second that day. Came back for 40, now in the barn of Brad Cox, ran second that day. These are the kind that, boy, you're always skeptical of. 9 starts, doesn't have a win yet, still a maiden. But we have 3 nice second-place finishes. Nice improving, I think, number-wise at least, second-place finishes in the last 3 starts. And looking at the rest of the field, I think maybe Shannon's Girl can break through today. Aaron Moore goes out for Todd Pletcher, lightly raced, maiden special weight to maiden claiming. Absolutely logical on all of that to be a contender in here. And then Temperance in the third spot. Plenty of early speed. Also, class-wise, moves down from the last start. Was at this level 2 back, however. Showed some early speed and faded to be an okay third down at Monmouth. So, again, returning to the 40 level. We'll have to negotiate a little bit from the outside post position. But I think, again, this is one of those, you look at the complexion of the rest of the field and the numbers this horse has fired in the past too should be in the mix. So in the ninth at Belmont, 3, 1, 10, and 9. All right, that takes you through the late pick 5 at Belmont. Gives you some ideas. Again, I'll be back in a little under 2 hours to take a look at the afternoon action with a Sunday OTB Live. Well, we'll look at those races live and kind of check off their odds and make some more decisions then and there. But now we're going to head to a commercial. When we come back, our friend Jenny Reese will join us. We'll talk a little Kentucky potential moves to the Breeders' Cup. Certainly Dennis's moment from Dale Romans will get in the discussion and more. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Birdstone surges past. Birdstone. Stone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flix Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you've come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. As promised before the break, joined by our friend Jenny Reese, working for the Kentucky HBPA, and sent out a press release the other day looking at some of the Kentucky runners heading to the Breeders' Cup. I thought the countdown has begun. Why not get a little head start on it? Jenny, good morning.
Well, good morning, Seth. Yeah, I'm really thinking it's going to be a bumper crop of Kentucky horses going to Santa Anita for the Breeders' Cup this year.
Yeah, certainly some of the names and some of the replays I pulled up would kind of indicate that is the fact. But before we actually touch on some of those names, I just want to go back because I know you do some work as well with Ellis Park, and just fill us in on the Ellis Summer, which for, you know, the past 2 or 3 years, the nice two-year-olds there at Ellis, and just watching from afar because obviously we're up at Saratoga, but it looked like it was another good summer down at Ellis Park.
Yeah, it was a terrific summer with we've already had 2 two-year-olds win grade one races.
Nice.
And then we had a couple others that were trained all summer at Ellis but weren't ready to run that became grade one winners with Max Field for Brendan Walsh winning the Claiborne Farm Breeders Futurity. And Brad Cox's filly that won the British Idiom, won the Alcibiade, also had trained at Ellis. So, you know, it's not a surprise anymore. It's not an outlier anymore when one of these two-year-olds goes on. When Street Band won the Cotillion, she became the fifth grade one winner who had raced last year at Ellis as a two-year-old. So, you know, our slogan now is Ellis Park, home of racing's future stars. And, you know, we're certainly hoping that Dennis's moment, you know, well, I don't want to sound like we're rooting for any specific horse, but let's put it this way. He won by 19 and a quarter lengths at Ellis Park in a maiden race and came back and won the Iroquois off his maiden race. We made a full-size poster of of him with pictures from that win, and so who knows what we'll do. I'm betting on Ball Cats if he wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but certainly there's other horses in there. Scabbard.
Yeah, we're going to take a look. While you're talking, let me pull up because we have the replay of the Iroquois. And off of that big win at Ellis, certainly everybody was waiting for this race. Went off at 2-5, and it will be number 8, Dennis's Moment, winning in there. As you say, Scabbard, the number 3 horse, runs second. So talk a little bit about these
and
two.
It wasn't 19 and a quarter lengths. I think it was 1 3/4 lengths.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that, you know, Irad Ortiz was really geared down the last part of it, and he nearly, I almost say he set a stakes record as it was. Now, I don't know how many years that the Iroquois did a mile 16th, but it was very impressive.
And you've talked to Dale since. I'm sure he's got to be high on this horse.
Oh, he's very high. He said this horse continues to amaze him. You know, he worked the other day in 58 and 4/5, galloped out in 111 and change, and he's, you know, it would be a good story because a few years ago at Santa Anita, Santa Anita, not Del Mar, he had not this time, for the same owners, Alba Family Stables. And he'd done the same thing, impressive maiden winner by only 15 lengths, I think it was, at Ellis, and then won the Iroquois, and ran a huge race against Classic Empire to get beat maybe ahead in the Breeders' Cup, was hurt in the race and never raced again. So they're looking at Dennis's Moment as his, as the ultimate do-over. But it would be a huge thing for Ellis Park and Kentucky Racing if Dennis's Moment ran well. But again, like I said, there's some other really good two-year-olds. I think, you know, the juvenile, it's got some very nice horses. Maxfield was really impressive, I thought.
Yeah, we have that. So we'll show that race while you talk from last week,
okay.
The Breeders' Futurity,
yeah.
Maxfield. I had Jeremy Plonk on last week. He liked Maxfield, so we were kind of touted on that one a little bit. It's 6-1, a nice price. Lately raced, obviously. I came in this with only the maiden victory at Churchill, but now 2-for-2, including the Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity. Maxfield's going to be the number 6 horse here. Chart margin is 5.5. So, as you say, another nice-looking Kentucky-based 2-year-old.
Oh, yeah, and he's kind of a gangly-type horse that, as somebody was saying to me, you know, a former trainer the other day, saying he's a horse you really think about as a 3-year-old. He's by Street Sense, who was the first horse to win the juvenile, the Breeders' Juvenile, and the Kentucky Derby. So I think there's a lot of upside. Brendan Walsh, who isn't one to get too carried away, but he said that when the horse won first time out, he thought he might be a horse that took a couple races to win, he said. And, you know, said, so obviously he, you know, as much as they thought of him, he fooled them. And just a quick aside, to another cheerleading note for Ellis Park. This is one of the horses when, this summer, was the first time Brendan Walsh had a division stabled at Ellis Park, and he loved it. He loved the racing surface for training. He loved the tranquility. There's a lot of grass around there. Felt a great place to develop horses. Says he'll have more there next year. But he told me one day, he said, you know, I've got horses here for Godolphin, and they're fine with it. And I thought that's about all you needed to know about the evolution of Ellis Park. That, you know, Godolphin, one of the leading outfits in the world, is great at having their horses at little Ellis Park. And this was one of those horses. So, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, I'm interested to see who's the favorite in the juvenile. I see the DRF as Dennis's Moment. But I'm thinking in California, Baffert's horse is Eight Rings, who does have a tie to Louisville, in that Starlight, which is mainly Louisvillians, is an owner in him. But I'm thinking, I'd be interested in your take on that. Who you think's the favorite in the juvenile?
Well,
and I think Maxfield would get a lot of play.
I think if he was going, Tis the Law would be the favorite. But you guys are going to benefit from their decision to go to the Kentucky Jockey Club. But, boy, I think the Funny Side folks have a nice horse there.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But
yeah, that's what Dale was saying. There's three really top horses saying, because he understands Barclay's horse is not going to the Breeders' Cup. And, yeah, so let's hope that, yeah, he comes. Then we'll call him a Kentucky horse, even though he's New York bred.
I think that's the game plan.
In the Commonwealth, you go over our airspace, you're a Kentucky horse in my eyes, the publicity director said.
I have no argument with their, you know, rather than ship the horse across country, try the Jockey Club, Kentucky Jockey Club, and get a race over the track. And but he was impressive last weekend. Maxfield, very impressive. I do wonder, though, that, yeah, since it's out in Southern California, does that just tilt in favor of, as far as betting, going to the Baffert horses?
Yeah, and it's Baffert, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you have a lot of play right there. So it'll be interesting, you know, if they want to make him the favorite, the people that are on the Dennis's Moment or Maxfield bandwagons, then that's all the better for them betting-wise.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly off of the win there, as you say, Godolphin. And I'm just looking down, and you know, you've mentioned it already, but I'm looking down and a series of workouts from Maxfield at Ellis Park. I'm guessing the game plan was just he wasn't ready for the Ellis meet.
Right. I think that's the case. There was a 2-year-old, and now it's funny. He ran against Dennis's Moment, maiden win. And I'm blanking on his name, but, you know, the scuttlebutt was Brendan's best horse. And I don't think he's trying to get him back in a maiden race. He ran back again and ran second. He didn't run particularly well that day. He came out, I think, with some crud, maybe. But it's funny, if that was his bet, you know, what is Maxfield bet?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think there were good horses that when he, you know, you think sometimes 19 lengths and what was a beating. But, you know, he ran fast, just basically under hand ride. And I think there were some well-intended horses. You know, Dale was there for the race that day, even though Saratoga was going on. Brendan Walsh was there. Brian Lynch was there. I mean, I bet you haven't seen those three guys maybe ever all together in an Ellis Park paddock. So, yeah, definitely Ellis Park is on the move. And I tell you what, we had some good two-year-olds there that also, you know, checked another box for me in that they went on and won the big two-year-old stakes at Kentucky Downs, Peace Achieved being the prime candidate. They put blinkers on. He wins an Ellis Park maiden race. He comes back and wins the Kentucky, the Gainsway Farm Juvenile at Kentucky Downs very impressively. And then he came back and won the winning year in at Keeneland, the Bourbon. So we got a lot of, his name's Peace Achieved, but they call him Peace of Cheese around the barn. So we think Peace of Cheese has a great side in there. And, you know, boy, in the Juvenile Fillies, Abscond went from an Ellis main race to win the Grade 1 Natoma in Canada for Eddie Keneally. And she's, you know, just training up to the Breeders' Cup. Jezebel's Kitten's a two-year-old filly that I had a lot of expectations for. Won her first two starts very impressively, including at Ellis and then the stakes at Kentucky Downs. Was fourth, pressed the pace, and kind of, you know, backed up to fourth in the two-year-old filly race, the Jesmine. So I don't know if she's going on to the Breeders' Cup or not, but I know they have a lot of high expectations for her. And, you know, there's other, some great card horses that I think coming from Kentucky that we're looking at. Cambria that won the Juvenile Turf Stakes, Sprint Stakes at Kentucky Downs, beating the boys. You know, she's got to beat her stablemate, Tamari, another filly that Wesley Ward will have in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. But, you know, they're both going to be coming from out of it, and that'll be interesting to see. And then you have Chimney Rock for Mike Maker, who was second both at Kentucky Downs and in the winning you're in, the Indian Summer at Keeneland, just barely beating like a head in both. And I think he's one you have to look at for the Juvenile Turf Sprint. You know, who knows what Europeans are coming over. It doesn't sound like Enable probably will, or unless you're hearing something more updated than what I've heard. But I'm thinking a horse even like Arklo, who won the Joe Hurst.
I like him.
He, you know, that was his first Grade 1, but he's been knocking at the door. I mean, I think that the Breeders' Cup turf is wide open.
Well, fill us in, too. The press release you sent out talked a little bit about Mr. Money, who was a three-year-old that people certainly kind of liked this year, but folks were kind of criticizing, geez, he's kind of going the second tier. Stepped up in the Pennsylvania Derby, and we'll watch the stretch run there, and Mr. Money runs second behind Math Wizard, who upset at 31-1. So people, I guess, weren't quite sure what to make of Mr. Money really here, although he running second, he finishes in front of War of Will and Improbable. But you talked to the connections of Mr. Money. What are their thoughts heading to the Breeders' Cup?
Well, I think the fact they got beat is one reason they're running. I think it stung. I think that they think he needs, as well as Brett Calhoun said, he needs to win a Grade 1 on a big stage.
Yeah.
And they feel, at, you know, going in the Dirt Mile, which is a two-turn race there, they know that's in his wheelhouse. Whether it's in one turn or two turns. You know, like Fred said, we don't want to be experimenting with a mile and a quarter at this stage. There's next year for that. But I think he's, you know, in that race, it was a funny race. Nobody went out. He found himself in front, and he's never been in front early in a race. I mean, the horse has speed, but I think some people are thinking maybe in retrospect, although you say, you know, you slow it, you back it up as much as you can, right? That's the textbook what you do. But maybe it would have been a little better if he'd gone on a little faster and made them have to catch him and sort of, as Brett says, run them off their feet. But anyways, he, you know, putting in perspective, I think that they did the right thing with the horse. I mean, you never go wrong doing right by a horse. And they picked off those four Grade 3 races. And, you know, he was expected to win the Pennsylvania Derby, but, you know, horse racing just doesn't always set up. I think he's won in the Dirt Mile. His sire, Golden Sense, won it twice, including at Santa Anita. I think that, you know, he's real live, especially if Omaha Beach goes in the Classic. You know, I think that changes a lot of dynamics wherever Omaha Beach goes. I tell you, Kentucky Philly that I think has a huge chance is, and I think she'll you know, good chance she'll be the favorite, Kofefi, the filly American friend.
Yeah.
I mean, she's brilliant. I'm not sure how she got beat at Churchill Downs when she got beat, but, you know, a few races back. But I think she's very exciting, and I'm really looking forward to seeing her. And I think Street Band, who, you know, won the Cotillion, is a interesting. I mean, this Midnight Bisou, it's her race to lose to Distaff, right? But I think at a price, Street Band is a horse that, you know, nobody will be paying any attention
to. And I also think Street Band maybe inserted herself in the conversation for the three-year-old filly Eclipse.
Yeah, I think so. If she could win the Distaff,
yeah,
wouldn't that be something? You know, and you know who else I think they're going to have in the Distaff? They're going to pre-enter in both. Is Serengeti Empress, the Oaks winner. And I think they'll go in the Distaff. Just talking to, it's a video I need to put together when I get the B-roll of her training, Serengeti Empress. But talking to Tom Amos, you know, there's a lot of speed in the Philly MS Sprint with Kofefi. And so, you know, you're going to be hooked. Where in the two-turn mile and eighth might actually be, you know, let's hope she doesn't draw the rail. You know, she's three races in a row. She, you know, had the rail, and tactically it worked against her. But I think, you know, the fact that they're going with Serengeti Empress, even though she's coming off not a good race for her in the Cotillion, where she backed up, but it was a crazy tight pace. If she could draw outside, maybe, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be so fast. But I just think that she's their Kentucky Oaks champion. Remember the last time she ran bad? The only other time she's run bad was in the Fairgrounds Oaks. Now, she had a severe bleeding episode that day. But she came back and won the Kentucky Oaks. So the fact that they're going on with her, to me, says she's a horse you cannot discount at all.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I haven't been a fan this year, but she's gutsy in every race, so you can't deny her that, certainly. And I was curious, as you were talking, I was thinking other horses and other Kentucky horsemen, and I was thinking of a late, and they're talking potentially the Breeders' Cup Classic with her. But I'm wondering, in Kentucky, do you consider Bill Mott a New York or Kentucky guy?
Well, I was going to say, do we get a count late? I'm, to be honest, I'm not counting her because mainly with Bill in New York.
Yeah.
But she has run, you know, several times in Kentucky. So, you know, if she wins, we'll definitely claim her, especially if she wins the Classic.
But I always I think a lot of people aren't aware of Bill. They think of Bill Mott as a New York guy. But, boy, his career record at Churchill, didn't Dale just pass it last
night? Until the time, and for the longest time, yeah. I mean, how many years was he? 30 years? Something like he was a leading winning trainer till Dale. passed him, what was it, a year ago, 2 years ago? I forget exactly when it was. And Steve Asmussen's going to go by both of them. But, yeah, but no, he won. I remember when I first started covering racing in the fall of 83, Bill Mott and Chuck McGee were both at Churchill. And Chuck had all nice horses. And Bill had some grade one horses. His first grade one winner, I believe, was Heatherton that went up and won. It was maybe called the Hempstead back then. But he also had all the claiming horses, too. He had a horse for every category. And it's been fun to see those two Hall of Fame trainers to be kind of there on the ground floor when they were really, you know, starting to get rolling. But speaking of other horses, I think Totally Boss is a horse in the Turf Sprint. You know, he won the stakes at Ellis to get the win, and you're into the Run Happy Turf Sprint at Kentucky Downs because they were afraid he wouldn't get in the race if he didn't, as with stakes winners preferred. So he wins that. I think he's a horse that's going to have a huge chance in the Turf Sprint you know, will get a little overlooked, perhaps. And then Leinster, who, you know, won the stakes up at Saratoga. No, he can't be discounted either. You know, hey, but speaking of a late, I'm just looking at my list of horses. Can we claim Midnight Bisou then?
Oh, well.
If we can claim the late, we can claim that. I mean, because he's probably spent more time actually this year in at Churchill Downs than a late. But I can see if people want to say she's a New York horse, for sure. But, you know, Whitmore in the Sprint, again, I'm just looking at my list. He's one that's going to come flying, and one of these days the race is going to set up for him at 8-6. You know, we know in the sprint from seeing in the past, I think horses as old as 8 have won it before. He's certainly, you know, very live. You know, I see the DRS has Hog Creek Hustle. I need to check with Vicky Foley. They have him in the sprint. You know, he's a 3-year-old taking on older horses. Had he won the Phoenix, I think he would definitely be in. And speaking of the Phoenix, the winner that day, Engage. That's a little more of a stretch for it. Oh, I'm going to claim him. It's an Asperson horse and he won a stakes at Keeneland. We can call him.
There you go.
Partners can claim them, too. That's the brilliant thing about publicity in horse racing. All politics are local. Yeah.
I claim all the Saratoga winners.
Canada can claim them. So, yeah. I really think that it's you know, one of the best groups overall, outside of when it's been at prep, when it's been in Kentucky, going out to California. I think it's a good year, too, because I think there's some horses that are staying away. Some horses like Preservationist that was retired to stud. I didn't really see an explanation if he was retired to stud. Was he, you know, I think there's some people that think, you know, maybe we're just going to take a step back this year and just, you know, go on and get them prepared for their second careers. I think, you know, with Barkley Tag, I just think that there's some horses that maybe aren't going to the Breeders' Cup that in past years would have gone.
And we got to wrap it up here, Jenny, but before we do, we've kind of alluded to it in the overall conversation, but just talk a little bit about being from Kentucky and a PR Kentucky person, but talk about Kentucky racing, which seems like with the historical racing machines and the money that's been put into the purses, and certainly I would say over the past, since the summertime, the press on Kentucky racing, it just seems like it's always been one of the preeminent jurisdictions in the country, but maybe even a little bit of a resurgence over the past
absolutely,
year or so.
Absolutely, not a little bit major. It was just, I was just thinking, as you were talking, it was just a few years ago, what it was noted for was taking a step down. Churchill's purses had been stagnant for years. Keeneland's purses hadn't really, you know, seen much increase. And then Ellis, and I got to say, and again, you know, I do work for Kentucky Downs as well. The linchpin of it all was the former owners of Kentucky Downs taking the gamble on historical horse racing.
Yeah.
And Churchill wanted no part of it. They wanted, whether they wanted to see it pass the legal test first, or I think they were holding out for full-fledged casinos. Well, they saw what happened at Kentucky Downs and what with Kentucky Downs purses. Once they did win the protracted, Kentucky Downs won the lawsuit that established by, you know, the judge that it absolutely is pari-mutuel and therefore legal in Kentucky. They built Derby City Gaming, and let me tell you, they've gotten the religion big time. Then they just went and bought Turfway Park. They're going to try to do the same thing, and I think that's going to be a home run up there because I think there's a lot of people, a lot of population in northern Kentucky doesn't want to go across the Ohio River. I think, you know, Derby City Gaming showed that. We got a full-fledged casino with sports betting in right across the Ohio River from Louisville, but Derby City Gaming's just really taken off. And that's really going to be the shore up the one weak link in the circuit, Turfway Park, which, I mean, I remember before Ohio got simulcasting that there were trainers right and left staying at home. The track site in Louisville was open for year-round training then to race at Turfway, because the purses were better than the fairgrounds, better than Oakland, better than Gulf Street. And then, you know, you just didn't see it anymore. You saw, like, the Ohio guys running at Turfway in the winter. Really, really was on hard time. The grandstands in disrepair. Churchill's really going to invest a lot of money. And so I think everything's very bright. And I think the thing that maybe was not appealing to Churchill in the first place ought to be appealing to all the racetracks now, in my mind. If you get full-fledged casino gaming in Kentucky, the chance of getting it as a monopoly, I think, are slim. But the tracks are the only ones that can have historical horse racing because it's pari-mutuel.
Yeah, and as I say, looking at the situation over the past 6 months or so, I mean, I remember back when you were writing for the Louisville Courier-Journal, there was a period where you were kind of lamenting purses at Churchill as compared to Indiana. It's just flip-flop.
Absolutely.
And now you understand it when you look at the personalities, the owners and trainers who are showing up now with strings in Kentucky. And, again, that's become more apparent over the last 6 months or so. So
I think it showed up at Saratoga this summer.
Yeah. I agree.
The strength of the growing strength of Kentucky, the horses that stayed home that would have gone there in the past.
Yeah, Dale said more horses this year at Ellis. Mark Cassie said more horses.
Mark
at Ellis.
Cassie and Brendan Walsh.
Yeah,
was one that did not send a string up there.
Yeah, so interesting, but good for Kentucky again. One of the preeminent circuits. Jurisdictions.
Well, I think horse racing needs strong circuits everywhere. They need it strong in New York. They need it strong in California, and that's just taking it on the chin. Very alarming what's going on there, including politically as far as I think it's become a political football horse racing. And I think Chicago, very sorry to see Arlington not applying for a casino license because who knows what that's going to mean for the future of Chicago. But I'm somebody that, it's a shame that there's no horse racing in New England. That used to be a great place. So I like seeing I like seeing everybody strong.
Yeah, I'm with you because I think the live product is what draws new people in. People visit the track and you cash a couple of tickets, and that's what gets you going. And so I'm with you on that count. Jenny, got to wrap it up. But as always, appreciate the visit. Maybe as we get closer to the Breeders' Cup, we will check in again. But
absolutely,
always...
I'm going out the 24th, so I'll be there for Dennis's Moments Last Work the next day. So
Did Dale say he is going to ship out with Dennis's Moment?
He's going to ship out the 20th. So work this coming Friday, ship out the 20th, and then work the 25th at Santa Anita.
Oh, nice.
And then, like he says, just school them in the paddock, school them in the take them to the gate to school, and then lead them over, and let's see who's the champion.
Sounds good. And again, we'll check in again before the Breeders' Cup. Appreciate the visit this morning.
Always a pleasure, Seth.
Jenny Reese, Kentucky HBPA, Ellis Park, Churchill, Kentucky Downs, and more from Kentucky. Catching up on some of the runners that will be heading from Kentucky, or Kentucky-based, let's say, heading out to the Breeders' Cup this year. All right, do want to remind you, today is NFL Sunday at the Clubhouse Racebook, as it is every Sunday throughout the NFL season. What does that mean? It means, A, you wear a jersey, you get in for free. B, you get to watch all the games and enjoy all the racing action. C, put your name on a square, maybe a winner jersey or a food voucher. Always a lot of fun. NFL Sundays here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Two programming notes. First, Thoroughbred Racing tonight. Here on the network and available to bet via CapitalOTBBet.com. So the Thoroughbreds will be available tonight. And tomorrow, we will have a special holiday edition of OTB Live. So I'll be in the studio tomorrow afternoon, as well as some of the jurisdictions that will normally take a Monday off will be on tomorrow on Columbus Day, the holiday. So again, we'll have a holiday edition of OTB Live tomorrow, Monday. But we'll have a regular Sunday edition coming up in an hour and a half, somewhere in that vicinity, OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. So stay tuned for that. We appreciate your joining us this morning. Again, back in a little while with OTB Live for this Sunday afternoon. So we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.